Here we are.
We're back. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Review Anything. My name is Glenn Johnson.
And I'm Joe Frank.
2023.
A year of movies.
A year of laughter.
A year in retrospect.
2023.
NPR. Today, we're interviewing each other.
That's right. Why do we love movies so much? What is it about cinema that captivates us and draws us in? 2023 held the key to those answers, and today we're going to be dissecting why.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Yep, here we are. The back 10 best movies of the
definitively.
Year.
Even though we disagree on it, we don't have the same top 10.
No.
How crazy would it be if we had one year?
The exact same.
Yeah.
With the show same, up and have the exact same ranking same. And everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. But yeah, so we have our top, each have our top 10 lists, and we're going to do it the exact same way that we did it last year, where we go through our outlier picks first. So the ones that only appear on either one of our lists, talk about those, which works out because most of those movies are ones that we haven't talked about on the podcast at all yet. And then we have our consensus picks and then our number one films. And most of those we have already talked about in some capacity, either in a full episode or on the last episode of the Oscars. So some of our comments may be brief for those, but see if we have any new thoughts. Oh yeah, we could do a quick Oscars recap. We did say we were going to do that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was good.
It was pretty good. Nobody got slapped.
No.
unfortunately.
Yeah, the Oscars just haven't been as exciting since they opened the wrong envelope and Will Smith got slapped. Not Chris Rock got slapped.
Jimmy Kimmel was very vanilla, but so much better than whoever that guy was that did the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
That was so insane.
Yeah, I still haven't seen anything from that. I just know what you've told me about it.
It was definitely like watching a train wreck. It was wild. It's probably worth watching his opening monologue because it was insane.
There was a lot of dad jokes, like just puns.
Yeah.
It was mostly puns.
Yeah, that's pretty much all it was. Very grown worthy.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
I feel like there were some people that presented though that were really funny. Who was the
John Mulaney?
John Mulaney. That was the highlight for sure.
The Field of Dreams.
It was so good. That's like amazing.
Another low light presenter though was Octavia Spencer and Melissa McCarthy. That was very strange.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they actually did go off teleprompter, but
It felt like it reminded me of the Frozen acceptance speech.
Wait, which one?
So I guess I don't remember.
Let's see, if it when was you like say that, I just think animated. Of John Travolta saying Adele Dazeem.
Please welcome the wickedly talented one and only Adele Dazeem.
But this is something.
No, something different. Yeah, it was when they like they got best adapted screenplay or something like. I don't know. Our best like animated screen. I don't know. I don't know what it won. It won
probably,
something.
Probably best animated film.
And they went out the two. I think they're a married couple that like made the movie. I think. I don't know. But they went up there and they like did this rhyme. Like one would say a line. After, it was so cringe. Oof. I mean, I was dying inside. I had no reason to not like them. I didn't know who they were. I had not even seen Frozen. That was bad. It was,
some highlights though. I'm very happy that Jennifer Lame won for best editing.
Yeah, that was
very well deserved.
Never mind. I was gonna say that was pretty lame, but that's so dumb.
That's a Kimmel joke right there.
Yeah, it really was. I groaned at myself
before you even said it.
Before
you didn't
I
even finish.
It. Yeah, I couldn't do it. Yeah, that's.
And then Oppenheimer winning was.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was all around. It was a very like expected. Like, I don't feel like there's anything that was like, whoa, seriously?
I think Emma Stone was a little bit surprising. Yeah. Not that I didn't think, I mean, I still haven't seen it. Oops.
Yeah.
But
You poor thing.
Oh, Jimmy. But yeah, I didn't expect that she would win. I mean, that's
cool. That was surprising.
Cool that she won. I think that was probably the only thing that surprised me. Not that I predicted everything, but like it was still.
I did not do very well. I got like less than half right.
Yeah.
In my.
But the things that weren't like what I thought were still not like shocking. Yeah. Or anything. No. It was like, okay, well.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, there you go. There's our official Oscars recap. I know everyone, it's been weeks now and everyone's been clamoring to know what we thought.
And if any of you didn't see it, now you're fully 100% filled in.
You're caught up. What happened.
So no more FOMO.
Okay, cool. Let's get into the picks then.
Today's episode is sponsored by The Eclipse. Yeah. Wow. Just what an opportunity.
I'm beaming thinking about this.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Don't look at Glenn right now. Not without some pretty dark glasses.
Yeah. Wear those glasses. Otherwise, you'll get my face burned into your retina.
In your retinas.
You'll just see my smiling face
the rest of your life. Which, you know.
It's not bad. The worst
not
things.
Not bad thing. Yeah.
Worst things. But this was very unexpected.
Yeah. The sun.
Yeah.
And the moon. And the earth.
They called our office.
Yeah.
It was like a group call.
Yeah.
It was a random number. So at first I ignored it, but then the voicemail was like, hey, this is the sun. Just give me a call back.
Yeah.
So I was like, huh? So I called and he's like, can I get the earth and moon on here really quick with us?
Well, it started as a Zoom call, right. But the sun, it was just white.
Yeah.
You couldn't see anything. Right. It was all like the camera can't.
We spent like 20 minutes being like, is just, your camera on?
Yeah.
And then we realized what
it's
was going
just
on.
Too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
the earth looked good. The earth and moon looked pretty good though. But
yeah, they're pretty good. Yeah.
I guess they had been talking and wanted, with the big event coming up, to give some more publicity for it. Some people don't.
Yeah. I mean,
like, a lot of people
sense.
Don't know about it. So
this is going to really expand the reach.
If this platform, if we can use our platform to inform, I mean, that's the goal.
That's what we're
every
here
day
for.
We want to inform.
Yeah, I mean that's the whole reason this podcast exists.
So to work with such luminaries like the sun, moon, and earth was huge.
Yeah.
So we
big shout out.
Yeah.
To the big
so again,
thing.
April 8th.
Yeah. Tune in.
Yeah.
On Earth. You know. Like
you have
in
to
person,
be
like not on TV. I mean, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah, you could watch
just get some movie. Glasses first, though, because we have to say that.
Yeah, that is reasons. In the notes that they sent us.
Wear your safety.
And not just like eye, not like just
right.
glasses. Like
Ray-Bans.
Yeah.
No, they need to be like special ones for the sun, for sun viewing purposes.
Yep. But huge honor.
Yeah. Check it out. It's going to be great.
It's going to be cool.
It's going to be lit.
Some honorable mentions.
Yeah. Let's mention them honorably.
Yeah. The esteemed Asteroid City
starts playing the Masterpiece Theater music.
a couple of mine. Actually, I have three that in certain ways could have made my list, but just didn't. Asteroid City is very good. I really, really like it. I've seen it twice now.
Oh, wow.
It was almost better on rewatch, knowing what to expect. But I won't spoil it, but there is a scene in it that is probably my favorite scene of the year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And people who've seen it know what scene it is.
Okay.
So it's,
I need to watch it.
Yeah. It's really good. And then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, also really good. If it is the end, if it's like a trilogy, very fitting end to the trilogy. Focuses on Rocket, which really liked. Good backstory. And it was just like, it sounds so simple, but it was refreshing to watch a Marvel movie that used music, like actual, like it just felt like a film. Like the way that they used music, the way it was shot and edited, it just felt a lot more artistic. Minded.
Interesting.
And that's the most recent Marvel movie I've seen since Endgame.
Yeah. I mean, same. I think I've only seen the shows. Some of the
shows.
Yeah,
I have seen
a couple. I don't think I've seen...
Actually, I think I've only seen Loki, yeah. But yeah, so 5 years, and this is, I think, the only one I've watched since then.
Crazy.
And it was really good.
That's good.
And then the last consensus pick, or honorable mention, is one that you also had, which was Barbie.
Yes.
Didn't quite make my list, but...
Yeah, mine are... Barbie is one of two, and Barbie was just barely bumped off the list.
Yeah, it was on your list.
It was on there. It was on the top 10. It is worthy of someone's top 10.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just not
such
ours.
Such a weird thing to say. but no, it is great. I would, it's so close to being on my list.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's other movies that were just like a little bit more impactful to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too woke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it really boils down to.
It's really just, as a man, I just can't put it on my top.
Yeah.
Top 10.
Yep.
Had to put
Fast X on there instead.
Yeah.
That's a movie for men.
That's for family.
Yeah. That is about family.
Yeah.
I'm scared someday someone's going to listen to this like out of the blue and not know that that's very much not real.
Yeah. Because hyperbole usually is humor. But in this case, it's just what people actually say.
Yeah, it's too close to reality. Yeah, that's true.
The other one is Dungeons and Dragons. Not a masterpiece by any means. And it probably would never have made it onto my top 10. But I had a great time.
Yeah.
It was fun. I've watched it twice, actually. It was just a fun movie. It feels like a little bit of a throwback movie in some ways. Maybe not perfectly, but for the most part, they kind of avoided the modern like Marvel humor style of doing things. Like there is some... that kind of feels similar to that type of humor, but a lot of it is just more like organic to
the story. Well, I'm a fan of those. I think that was written and maybe even directed by, I forget what his name is, but they wrote Game Night and Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yep.
And it's the kid from Freaks and Geeks. Did you ever watch that show?
No, but I know people who love that show. Yeah.
I forget what, it's like him and his writing partner, but everything they've written has been legitimately very funny.
Yes. Yeah. They do like good comedy stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Date Night is,
Game Night.
Game Night, yeah, not Date Night.
Date Night very with different. Steve Carell.
Yeah. Not that movie. I mean, it's fine, but not. Game Night is excellent.
Yeah. Cool. Well, getting into our outlier picks, these are going to be out of order. My number 8 is... And I looked up how to pronounce this, and I still have a feeling I'm not going to say it right. So all of our French listeners, I know we have a huge French population.
Get your tomatoes ready.
Menu plaisir les trois gros.
And just uproar in the studio audience. Just absolute chaos.
I'm sure I butchered that. I think I got the Les Trois Gros pretty well, but Menus Plaisirs Les Trois Gros. Frederick Wiseman's new film, which is a 4-hour look at the French restaurant run by the Trois Gros family. Michel is the father. Caesar is one of his sons, and then Leo is his other son, and then I think his wife's name is like Marie-Anne or Marie-Anne. So it looks at their restaurants and it's in his very established style of complete observation, no interviews, no music. Yeah. The form and structure is all just in how it's edited together. The story that kind of emerges, which the story and the themes that emerge are of family relationship, legacy, and... old and new, because as the film goes on, it starts to establish like Michel, the father, has been doing this for his whole life, and he kind of feels like he's ready to fully give over control to his sons, who are also chefs and part of the business and running the restaurant. But that comes through like watching them just have conversations about the menu and kind of argue back and forth about what, and then intercuts that with Michel going out to the people who are eating at the restaurant and just having conversations with them. And so through these small moments picked up where he's talking about his sons and legacy and stuff. So there's no interview where you're getting all that it's all just like this overheard stuff, but the way that it's, and like, you know, there's like even just a cutaway of his son Caesar with his son who's like 1 year old. So it starts to build this theme ever having to actually say anything. And then it's just like super satisfying to watch like some of the best chefs. I mean, it's a 3-star Michelin restaurant.
Yeah.
Some of the best chefs in the world prepare food. And a lot of people have talked about it in that it is the antithesis to like a Fox reality show or like even a Food Network show where they're like, I'm coming out of your job. Yeah. Like yelling and cursing and there's like fire shooting up everywhere.
The bear.
Everyone's just super like respectful, but very like clear about what they need.
Yeah.
So, and very quiet moving around. I don't know how chefs and people like waiters remember stuff. Like they'll come back and be like, we need 3 full menus with one without asparagus, 1 no dairy. We need 3. And they're like, yes, chef. And then they just start like, I don't know how you have a brain to be able to do that.
Yeah. It's crazy.
But it's very satisfying to watch. I did watch it over probably like 5 or 6 sittings just because it's 4 hours long. I would love to watch it all in one sitting, but it just was not very realistic. But it's still, it's a great film, very much in his style. And it's crazy that he's 93 and still directing and editing.
Yeah.
He edited the film.
That's crazy.
Which is insane. And it's edited. I mean, he's probably my favorite editor in that those films are made in the editing. I mean, he takes like 400 hours of footage and condenses it into something that is thematically rich and satisfying to watch. So
it's impressive.
It is.
Is it all in, is it in French or are they speaking? Okay.
There's like, so it's all subtitled. Sometimes he'll talk in English if the person that is at the restaurant, like one of the customers is English. Some
dumb tourist.
Yeah. But for the most part, it's all subtitled.
Yeah.
But there are, and so, but he also like goes deeper in that he'll like, he goes to the farm where they get their cows and you just like kind of watch how that process. And then he goes to like the cheesemaker where they source their cheese and like where get the wine. So like the grape field. So like it's trying to show this, like, what does it take to be a 3-star Michelin restaurant?
Yeah.
But just through this observational, quiet kind of style
that's cool.
I love. So yeah, had to be on the list.
Yeah. Next up, my number 7, Godzilla Minus One. Yeah, this movie kind of took me off guard. So I our friend Tyson, who's appeared
friend
on the show,
shout
out to Tyson, huge supporter. I mean, just millions.
Yeah, he's
millions
in the million
dollars. I mean, just so generous. I went and saw Shin Godzilla with him back in like 2016 or 2017, whenever that thing came out. That was actually the first Japanese Godzilla I've ever seen. I've never seen the original movie or any of the old films. I had only seen, I think that was after Gareth Edwards
one. Yeah, Gareth Edwards one came out like 2014.
Yeah, which I loved that one for the most part. And then I've watched the sequels of those just because they're just really stupid fun to go watch. But they're very forgettable. Based on the trailer, I was expecting something that would be kind of in between the two, because Shin Godzilla was very much like a searing government, almost satire. It was legitimately funny throughout the movie.
Was that animated?
No.
Oh, it was live action.
Yeah, Shin Godzilla. Live action. The effects were insane and like not necessarily like a good way. It was like watching it was weird. It was like some of the CG models of Godzilla looked just absolutely bizarre. It was a lot of fun. So I kind of expected somewhere in between the two and then got something completely different that I never would have expected. Even based on the trailer, I'd seen the trailers, but it was nothing like what I thought it was going to be. It's a very heartfelt, moving, emotional journey that I just did not see coming at all. And it's incredible. I've only seen it once. I want to watch it again. I know they released the silver version or whatever they called it. Like maybe I'm confusing that with Mad Max, but the black and white version, which looked really cool. Yeah, it was excellent. I mean, just very good story, very thought-provoking, and it kind of like, you kind of see the Japan side of World War II from a different perspective and the aftermath of all that. And it's a very human movie, which is crazy.
Not what you would typically expect from a Godzilla
movie.
No. And probably in contrast to like Godzilla King of the Monsters or what's coming out, I think, this weekend, Godzilla X Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very different characters that feel very real and are also very earnestly written. The whole thing is very serious, takes itself very seriously, which could hurt the movie. But in this case, I think it really helps.
Well, that can only add to like the terror. Cause I mean, if it's just a bunch of NPC type people that you don't really care about, then when Godzilla shows up.
Yeah. Which is how Shin Godzilla was, but it just had such a different focus that it made sense in that movie because it's a great movie. But this one is just so much more human. And I mean, there are moments in it that are like, man, this actor is going full. Mm. I mean, mm-hmm. going hard. And but it works. I think if you took it out of context, it'd be like, what is happening? Yeah. Like, why is this actor being this way? But like in context of the film, it works. And it's great. I can't speak highly enough of that movie. Number six for you.
Yeah.
Was one I've never heard of. That makes two so far.
Yeah. It's another documentary. So yeah, my number six is Turn Every Page, The Adventures of Robert Caro and Robert Gottlieb. All I saw was it said it's about an author and his editor and their like years long relationship. And I'm interested in writing and I like reading and I'm interested even in, I'm a film editor, but even the process of like editing a novel, I'm just interested in that process. Yeah. And I had never heard of Robert Caro or Robert Gottlieb. Robert Caro is a political writer. He wrote a very famous book that I had never heard of until I watched this movie called The Power Broker, which is about Robert Moses, who is the guy who basically like designed New York City.
Oh.
And made New York City what it was. And so the book looks at power and like how that power that he had, which again is interesting because like Robert Moses is not a name that I think anyone knows, most people know, unless you're into politics, but it's considered a masterpiece, that book is. And so Robert Gottlieb was his editor. Now Robert Caro for the past like 40 years, it's a long time, has been working on like a 5-part biography of Lyndon B. Johnson, and that's pretty much what he's dedicated the rest of his life to. It kind of goes into the history of Robert Caro's career as a writer, and then Robert Gottlieb, his career as an editor, and then how they kind of converged, and now sadly Robert Gottlieb has passed away, but how their relationship and what the dynamic of a writer and editor is. As someone who's interested in writers and reading and the process of writing, I just loved it. Like Robert Caro is the type of creative person that I want to be and I'm not, where he just is so dedicated to the work and shows up every day and just, I mean, he's been writing about the same person, like to delve that deeply and fully into something and so passionately for most of your career is, it's not something that most people do. And there's a really like beautiful moment at the end where I guess their process of editing, where he brings a manuscript, they always like, they sit down and they read it together and will mark and discuss things. And that's never been captured. And like, they don't want it to be captured. Hmm. So at the end of the film, they allowed the camera in, but with no audio. So there's this like beautiful montage where it's just, I can't remember. There might be a music playing or it might just be dead silent. And you're just seeing them talking and like looking at stuff. It was just a really effective way to show that and creative way to show that process. So yeah, just a really surprising documentary that I don't know why. I mean, I do know why I watched it, but I feel like it's a very, very specific audience documentary. But I loved it. Yeah, it was great.
Nice. So number three for me.
So this is jumping up. This is high on your list.
Yeah. Zone of Interest, which I think I talked about in the Oscars. Mm-hmm. There's not much more to say about it. It's an incredible movie. And I, unlike some people, who have probably changed their mind on it since the Oscars acceptance speech. I think it's an incredible film, extremely effective at what it's doing. I don't think I'll ever forget the experience of watching it, and I don't know if I could ever watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it's good.
So those are all our outlier picks. A lot less outlier picks than last year. Last year we had a lot more.
Mm.
That didn't make your top 10. Maestro.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
I know you said you were debating it last time, but
yeah, it was good. I mean, I liked it, and I think I enjoyed the experience of watching it, but it's no, just fair. Not.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not what it thinks it is.
Yeah.
That's the problem with that movie. If it didn't think it was so good,
yeah,
it would be so much better.
That's a really good description. Honestly.
So, but here we are.
Yep.
Bradley Cooper really wants that Oscar.
He does, and he missed out. Didn't get anything.
He wanted it too bad.
He did. He really did.
They knew. They're like, he wants it
way too
bad.
He cares way too much.
Yeah.
All right. First consensus pick. My number 10 and your number 8.
A holdover from a different time of filmmaking. The Holdovers.
The Holdovers, which we also talked about on the Oscars episode.
Yeah.
Pretty in-depth.
Yeah. And I've since changed my mind. It's a terrible movie.
That's not true.
Number 8, yeah. It wasn't hard for me to pick that one to go on the top 10. I mean, it's a great movie.
This one could have gone Holdovers, Asteroid City, or Barbie for me, that number 10. Yeah. And I feel like Holdovers is one that I'll probably return to more than the other ones. Like, I could see myself watching it most winters.
I think that's kind of what makes it on this list for me, because it does feel like something that is timeless. Mm-hmm. Like it's something that I could get a lot of enjoyment out of more than once.
Same. Next up,
Spoderman.
Across the Spoderverse.
Kind of crazy that this was a musical. Yeah, all the Beatles songs and stuff.
Yep.
Across the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
The movie from 2007. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
My number 9, your number 10.
Yeah.
So that one just eked in for you.
Yeah, it's very weird. Two animated movies on my top 10.
Not normal.
Not normal. But this is top tier animation.
Yeah, it is. It's
storytelling,
so
good. Everything. I mean, it's every level of it is, or like on every level, it's just.
Yeah.
So well done.
Yeah. I liked the first one. I wasn't like as insanely into it as a lot of people were, but I really liked it. Like it's a great movie. I liked this one more than the first one. And I don't know. I think it maybe is just, to me, felt a little more emotionally resonant.
Mm. It's a little more complex.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is what it is. It maybe even starts to delve into some different aspects of the Spider-Man character, because the first one was different, but it still like dealt with death of a family, close family member, how that affects Miles and all of that stuff. So this one was like his relationship with Gwen, plus his relationship with his parents, plus like even that thing that they introduced where it's like messing up a core storyline kind of beat, like where he saves the New Delhi
cop
version of Uncle Ben or something like that.
Yeah.
Like that he messed that up and like what that does, like that's kind of an interesting.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved the fact that it ended on a cliffhanger. I did not bother me at all.
And it's got some like kind of like jaw dropping twists in it too. Like there was some pretty crazy stuff happens in that movie.
And also Spot is like a great villain.
Yeah.
Like, or the Spot, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Not only is he interesting, like visually and like how he works and stuff, but it also is like a pretty empathetic character. Yeah. And Jason Schwartzman does a really good job voicing him. And
it is also just like, it's very creative and very a good setup for a lot of humor too.
Yeah.
Like the fight scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is very different from Kingpin. Because Kingpin was like very serious, mean.
And maybe that's another reason why I liked this more is that just felt like a very typical. I mean, he had an emotional backstory.
Yeah.
Like they did a good job still making you care. But he was just a little more like, oh, yeah, this is a generic superhero bad guy.
And for having that character in that movie, I think it was done really well. But I agree. Like, it is, this one's a little more interesting and unique. I mean, definitely more unique.
Yeah.
For sure. It's great. Yeah, it's a great movie.
It's a great movie. Just, I didn't expect much, but I was blown away whenever we finished it. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah.
Next up, my number 7, your number 9.
The Boy and the Pigeon.
Did you watch a different movie?
Yeah.
What?
It was from Redbox.
Oh, no.
It was pretty good. That's all.
What happens in it? Just out of curiosity.
I don't remember. It has to do with, like, he's like feeding the pigeons like bread and stuff, and then the pigeon like gets really big, and then he rides him.
Okay.
And like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Who was the director? Just out of curiosity, do you remember?
I don't know. I never heard of him. I think it was his last movie, though.
Oh no. Okay. Well, I watched. And on my list is The Boy and the Heron.
Oh, right. That's on mine, too.
Oh, okay. So The Boy and the Pigeon and The Boy and the Heron.
That's a different movie. It's on a different list.
Oh, okay. Hayao Miyazaki's The Boy and the Heron. So, yeah, my number 7, your number 9.
I think, did we talk about this?
Yeah, we did an episode.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
So
we did
see a whole previous episode
right.
on all of our thoughts, but it's held up for me.
I will say, compared to other Miyazaki movies, Howl's Moving Castle, Princess Mononoke, Totoro. Those are definitely my top three.
Yeah.
And those stuck with me a lot more than this one did. Like, having some space between when I saw it and now, like, it definitely has, it doesn't feel as resonant as those movies did. And like, there's something about those three in particular for me that, like, the feeling of watching those movies kind of just, like, it's like every time I thought about Howl's Moving Castle, I could remember this just feeling I had watching it. And the same with especially Totoro. I mean, that one,
yes,
more than I think any of them, has such a good, like,
yes,
mood. And there isn't really anything like that with this movie, at least on the first watch.
Yeah.
It's good. It's very well done.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, creative. It's all the things that you expect from Miyazaki. It's just, yeah, just didn't quite land as well as his.
I mean, even for me, which it's hard to compare because, like, The Wind Rises is such a different film. Like, it's a lot more grounded, but just how emotionally resonant and beautiful that movie is from the first viewing stuck with me.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, to your point, like, it is a beautiful film, music, animation, even story, and the way, I think there's still a lot that I need to unpack with it, like, and rewatch it to get more, but
Yeah,
I love it. And it's, I mean, yeah, it couldn't not be on my list.
Yeah, same. I mean, it's very good.
Yeah.
Like, that, like, we're comparing.
Yeah, you know, it's, we're comparing masterpieces.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, there's not a bad movie. It's like, they're all better than
insane
95% of animated movies.
Yeah.
Like, they're in a different, completely different tier, no matter what. So,
for sure.
Next up,
Pastern Lives.
And this is our joint. Both landed right in the middle.
Yeah.
Number 5. Also talked about this in the Oscars episode in pretty good detail, but I think whenever I first watched it, I didn't expect it to be this high on my list, but it emotionally has lingered with me a lot more than most of the other movies I watched this year.
Yeah, I agree. It really, like, sticks with you. I think it has a lot to do with the way it all wraps up.
And yeah.
It
nails
the
ending so well.
It's just, like, haunting.
Yeah.
I feel like it adds to the genre of Before trilogy.
I was literally just thinking about those movies.
Without, like, you know, without feeling like a ripoff or something. It feels like its own thing,
yes,
for sure. But it definitely feels
like, I mean, it's almost like if Celine and Jesse had not ended up back together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Like, if Before Midnight was them. Like, Before Sunset is kind of this dynamic where they come together and it was like, oh, what could have been?
Yeah.
Because they both kind of went on, like, he got married. And so that's kind of what Past Lives is. Like, they meet back up,
yep,
but then they actually do stay together.
Yeah.
So yeah. It is almost like, what if that hadn't happened?
Right.
It is like a slightly different relationship dynamic than what's explored in before.
Yeah, but it definitely is very unique, like very much its own movie. And like, I feel like it had to have been influenced by Richard Linklater.
It's like if you mix the Before trilogy with like a Barry Jenkins movie where the filmmaking is much more poetic than Before. Like those movies are very, I mean, they're well made, but it's much more focused on what's being said and how it's being said.
Yeah.
And there are important conversations in past lives, but the filmmaking and like the beauty of that also carries a lot of weight.
Yeah. I mean, I would put it right there with the Before trilogy as far as like quality and how much I like the movie. I mean, it's very much
what it makes you right feel. Yeah.
So good stuff.
Yep.
Anatomy of a Fall, number 4 for you, number 6 for me.
Mm-hmm. So pretty close.
Pretty close, yeah.
The same position. This one is very high up for me, which I have watched it since the Oscars episode.
Yeah.
I had not seen it last time.
Oh, you hadn't seen it, right. Yeah.
And I loved it.
What were your
thoughts? It's, man, probably little spoilers, I guess, here, but...
Spoilers!
I love how, as the film goes on, the focus narrows to where, by the end, the only person who it really matters believes what they believe is their son. Because, you know, her defense lawyer might have an opinion, but might believe her, might not believe her. The prosecution definitely doesn't believe her, or at least that's what he has to do for his job. The media, it kind of, even some of the film is shot from a news camera. You see her like watching TV and them discussing it, and it's like this scintillating story of a writer who kills her husband potentially. So like, it kind of starts off in that way where it's, and even you as a viewer feel like you have the job of figuring out whether she did it or not. But in the end, the only thing that matters is whether their son believes it and then can live with that for the rest of his life. That's really what it comes down to, because he's the only one who this will matter for the rest of his life, that he has to, and it deals with very, very heavy things for that son,
you
know, coming to terms with either his dad committed suicide or his mom murdered. So either way, it's a terrible reality to have to accept, but which of those stories will he believe? And so I just loved how it slowly focused in. I mean, not even slowly, because even from the beginning, it starts to align. You start to align yourself with the son.
Yeah.
Or the film aligns itself with the son and is very empathetic towards him and how he's viewing all this and processing all of it. But I just thought that was very, very effective. Well shot, well edited. The script is amazing. Yeah, yep. I just loved it.
Yeah. A little throwback movie. Feels like forever ago. also a podcast episode.
Yep.
Godland.
My number 3, your number 4. Godland.
What a film.
Yeah, seriously.
It really doesn't feel like that was 2023. It feels like
years ago.
But man, just like such an amazing theater experience.
Yes.
Just having no clue
what
this was going to be and just watching it all unfold.
And it never went the way I was expecting.
No.
Yeah. And it really, I know we talked about it in the episode. We have a whole, 40 minute episode about this movie.
So
we're not going to, but I guess it's been a while since we talked about it or seen it, but it really just, it trusts you as an audience member so much to just go along with it.
Yeah.
And where you align yourself as the film goes along, like who you trust or who you, I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting.
It's a great movie. This makes me want to rewatch it. Beautifully shot in a very like different way than what I expected for it being set in Iceland.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I think we talked about this in the episode, but like you don't get a wide shot until...
It's like an hour in.
It's like... Not at all what I expected the movie to look like, but man, it's beautiful though.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are moments that are in my mind, which I know we talked about quite a bit in the episode, but the Ragnar kind of confessing.
Yeah.
That scene is, so beautiful.
Yeah.
The way it's shot and written is, it's beautiful. And then just the quiet decaying and then new life springing from death.
Yeah.
Which is insane that the way they shot that was he literally had a dead horse. I know we talked about this in the episode,
yeah.
But he had a dead horse on his dad's farm and would go out every few months and film it.
It's so crazy.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's an incredible, like, artist at yes. work. Like, that's yes. so next level.
Yeah, it is. And patient and, like, patient to get it to where it doesn't have to be production designed. Like, it,
yeah.
it, and it, I felt that in the movie. Like, it didn't feel like something where they shot that in like 2 days and quickly like added yeah. snow and then added dirt and flowers. Like, it felt yeah, it was, very it natural.
Blew my mind. I was yeah. like, how did, yeah. what am I watching?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Like, the only explanation for it is that it is real. Like, it's actually, mm-hmm. time is actually passing like yeah. that. I mean, that's wild.
Yeah.
Very good movie.
Great film. One that yeah. stuck with me and still ended up very close to the top, even a whole year later after seeing it. It's,
yeah, I feel like there are a lot of people who haven't seen this movie.
Yeah.
It was not a popular no. release whatsoever. So you should definitely try to watch this.
Yes. It is on Criterion Channel, I believe, yeah. streaming.
Give it a watch.
Yes. It's worth it. It's yeah. worth the journey. All right. Our number ones.
That was a drum roll.
Which we already pretty much talked about, also talked about in the Oscars episode.
Yeah, number ones and twos.
Yeah, for both of us, they're just yeah. flipped.
Yeah.
Joe, what is your number one?
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Which is my number two.
I had to pick it.
Yep.
It was just, Oppenheimer is incredible, and that's my number two.
Which is my number one. Yeah, we can kind of just talk about these
yeah. briefly. I don't know. I think Killers was just so, it felt more impactful just on a deeper and more meaningful level than Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer is also very, very good and very well done. So it's hard to pick, but I think that one just, Killers of the Flower Moon just stuck with me more, a little bit more. I only saw it once. I saw Oppenheimer twice and I just still feel a lot more drawn to Killers of the Flower Moon. I mean, it just seems like it's so well done. It's yeah, so good.
It is.
It just like, it feels like such a kind of culmination of Scorsese's career, mm-hmm. and not necessarily like culmination, but like, it just feels like it's everything that he does so well in one movie. That's just, it just, yeah, it's firing on all cylinders
yeah.
and just, yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah, that's an interesting point from a filmmaking perspective, from a character perspective, and then from also like a story and like what it is talking about, like the importance of it. Because like Goodfellas, the story itself matters a lot less than yes. the filmmaking and the...
And the characters and the,
yes,
the and vibe.
Like, yes, the propulsiveness and mm-hmm. like insanity of that movie.
Yeah.
And same with The Departed.
Yeah.
It's not fair to say that he hasn't had movies that are important before this, because that's not true. But like starting, I know we talked about it last time, but starting with Silence and The Irishman, and now this, it feels like he's melding like his filmmaking with these stories that feel really important to
yeah.
him in a way that is a lot deeper than just a snapshot of a world, or I don't know.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, it definitely, like, it's very mature Scorsese, yeah. but it's every bit as technically proficient as his earlier stuff. There's just so much power behind what he's, mm-hmm. the story that he's telling.
No, that's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about it like that.
Yeah. So that's my number one.
Very good choice.
Yeah. We'll spend the next 3 hours of the podcast fighting.
About why?
About this. Which one's number one? So yeah. go ahead, I mean, and give your defense, clear. And then I'll give my counter defense, and then we'll just keep going back.
It's
and forth.
Clear that it's Oppenheimer. That's really all I have
all
to
right,
say.
All right. Well, that's no. You're wrong. I'm sorry.
I realized after the last episode, I spent so much time talking about the Trinity test sequence that it seemed like I just didn't care about any other part of Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it is a. Yeah,
it's
pretty incredible. It's hard not to talk
because as I was editing, I was like, I didn't talk about a single element of Oppenheimer besides the Trinity
yeah, test. Yeah. Well, now's your chance.
Yep, here it is, redemption. So the Trinity test sequence was so good. That I would say that as from, again, like I said, from a theater going and filmmaking experience, is probably the reason why this is number one. Just it was an unforgettable moment. But I think, I mean, the whole movie is mind boggling of how it was made, how it was conceived and executed, and accomplishes what it wanted to accomplish. And it's the same way I felt when I first watched Dunkirk, where you're kind of thrown into a structure and thrown into even characters that you don't really understand or know. I think in this one, within about 5 minutes, there are three different titles that you see, three different like time periods and sets of situations going on. So like you have to kind of work your way into it and figure out how all these things are working and fit together, which took me probably longer than I'd want to admit with Dunkirk. I caught on a little bit quicker with this one, but it's a very satisfying film going experience to understand how these things are all fitting together. So I love all that. And yeah, I don't know. I hate to keep going back to the Trinity test, but that just like was a touch point of film for me last year. So that's probably what pushed it. It was really hard to pick between this and Killers of the Flower Moon, because Killers of the Flower Moon is so effective and such a masterpiece, but had to give it to Oppenheimer. And again, just like nails the landing of that. Oppenheimer nails the landing as well.
Yeah.
With that final moment and even the way that all those things all eventually converge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is so engrossing. I just, especially the first time seeing it in 70 millimeter.
Yes.
Just being like fully immersed in this story, which is so crazy to look at it on paper, because it's a bunch of people talking in rooms. And it's like, but you get so immersed in the movie, because I think in a large part due to the format of the movie, especially on that screen.
Yes.
Just being like so close to these characters' faces and like everything is so like big and like, but it's not like, there's very few like epic vistas or anything like that. It's not the type of film that you would imagine being shot on IMAX, but it works so well to just like put you in here into the story. And I mean, there were moments in that, especially the first time watching it, that I was so on edge and so felt my whole body was just like tense. And it's just people literally just talking to each other.
And that's just that like perfect combination of great actors, the score, the cinematography, and the editing. Like all of those things just working together perfectly.
Yep.
Another scene though that I should mention that especially worked really well with 70 was the kind of victory speech.
Yes.
Which was also another scene that's one, how do you conceptualize it? But then how do you pull it off so well, especially from an editing and sound design perspective? That scene is haunting.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. One of the best Christopher Nolan sequences.
Yes. From like, Trinity through that is insane.
It's hard to beat that.
Yeah. There you go.
There you have it.
There's our top tens. Cool. Well, yeah. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Guys. Thank you for clicking, watching, listening.
Today we want to give a shout out to George. We know you're out there.
Yeah. Mario Kart Boy 1966.
Yeah. Thank you.
Top fan.
You've been there. You're an OG. You've been there from the beginning.
Yeah. I hope he's still out there.
Me too. I hope he's still listening.
Man.
I'd be crushed to find out if he wasn't.
Why else are we doing this?
I know.
I mean, it's all for him. Our number one original fan.
Yep.
Join us again next time as we review anything.